flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to WCCO Radio on this Saturday. I'm your host, Dan Cook. Thank you for being along with me. And if you're anything like me, you were pretty well obsessed this week with the comet. Let me see if I can get this name right. It's Tsuchinshan Atlas, I believe is the name of it. But it was hanging out there in the western sky. You could see it with the naked eye. It was nice and bright early in the week. It's faded as the week has gone along. But perhaps you saw it, and perhaps that sort of inspired you to get into the hobby of stargazing or maybe even astrophotography. We got some great pictures. Even people just with cell phones got some great pictures of the comet this week. And, of course, we just had that huge supermoon again over the last couple of days. So it's been a really, really cool week for those of us in the hobby. But I know I was talking to a friend of mine. And her kid got way into the comet, was really, really mesmerized by the comet. Mom, can we buy a telescope? I really want to start doing this stuff. And so she reached out to me knowing that, you know, this was something that I was into. You know, what should I do? What's not too much to spend, you know, in case the kid decides next week that they're not as into it as they thought that they were. So I thought of a video that I had seen on a YouTube channel called Learn to Stargaze. And I recommended that to her, and then it inspired me this weekend to bring the gentleman behind that YouTube channel on. And this is John Reed. He's an author and a creator of that YouTube channel, Learn to Stargaze. And John, thank you very much for taking the time to join me here on WCCO Radio.
Dan, it's great to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Before we get to helping other people into stargazing, you do have to explain one thing to me. How does a guy who was working as an accountant, who was working in finance, wind up with an astrophysics degree and becoming a content creator and an author of stargazing books?
Well, that is quite the story. So at the time, I was living in California with my wife, and I had bought a telescope on a whim at the local pharmacy. I took it home, and then I saw a yellow star just above the BART line. That's the Bay Area Rapid Transit. It's outside of San Francisco, and I pointed it at this yellowish star, looked through this telescope, and it was Saturn, rings and all. And then that Christmas, my wife bought me a bigger telescope, a Dobsonian. It's a really popular telescope, really easy to use for kids. And I joined the the Mount Diablo Astronomical Society at that time. And I started volunteering with their outreach group, teaching students at the local schools all around the San Francisco Bay Area how to use a telescope and how to find things in the sky. And I realized that a lot of these students already had telescopes, but they just didn't know where to point them. And so I came up with a list of 50 targets, 10 for each season, plus the sun, moon, and planets. And I wrote, just put it in a book called simply 50 Things to See with a Telescope. And I almost wrote it for me, just so that I'd have a list of the 10 best targets for every season. But I figured out after about a year of struggling, how to get that thing published on Amazon, self-published. And it ended up selling enough copies. It solved people's problems. They were now finding stuff in the sky that I was able to leave my job and go back to school and get that astrophysics degree.
That's incredible.
So that's my story.
That's incredible. I love that so much. And now you're putting together an observatory in Nova Scotia, correct?
Absolutely. So the observatory is pre-owned. It already existed. It was the Abbey Ridge Observatory located in a place called Stillwater Lake. At least that's where it used to be located. And it was owned by an astronomer named Dr. David Lane. And he was the director of the a larger observatory at St. Mary's University here in Nova Scotia. And unfortunately, he passed away. But before he passed, his estate reached out to me and asked me if I would like to buy the observatory from them at a bit of a discount so that it could be part of what's called the Starfinder program, which is a program funded also by the estate to help school teachers teach their kids about astronomy. And so we're almost done resurrecting the observatory. We've got the building, the dome, the telescopes there. We're just working through some of the electronics right now that weren't quite working because the observatory was effectively abandoned for about a year. But once those are back online, that observatory will be fully operational, ready to do science and outreach once again.
That'll be awesome. And of course, folks who have interest in this can follow along as this process has gone along on your YouTube channel, Learn to Stargaze. And you posted multiple videos about it literally taking this thing apart and moving it to the new site and all the things involved with that. It's really, really interesting. But I want to dig in on this subject about people getting into the hobby. And I want to talk about it both from a kid's perspective and a grown-up's perspective, too. So we'll get to the adults in a minute. But if a parent is coming to you and the kid has caught the bug, and thanks to the comet or the auroras or the run of supermoons, whatever it is, give me a couple of pointers. What kind of things should parents be thinking about to both encourage the idea in the kids without having to break their bank?
Yeah. Well, I think the first thing to recognize is that most of the best stargazing experiences require no telescope at all. You know, it's going out, seeing the Milky Way on a moonless night. It's appreciating the supermoon. You know, it's going and seeing a meteor shower, primarily either the Perseids in August or the Geminids in December, you know, or just going out and appreciating the constellations. You've got a different set of constellations every season. There's sort of a summer sky, an autumn sky, a winter sky, and a spring sky, and they're all different in the evening. And so it's fun to learn what are the dominant constellations in that part of the sky. And then, you know, after you're sure they've got the bug and they want to move up to optics, Then I would recommend getting into a small telescope. But the challenge right now is that a lot of the small telescopes that are on the market are not designed for looking at space. They're marketed towards kids and they're marketed with pretty pictures of the moon, but that's actually not what they're designed to do. And so that can be a challenge for parents.
Okay, so let's step back for a minute. You talk about just going outside and seeing what you can see without any kind of optics. That obviously helps in terms of having dark skies. And as somebody who lives pretty close to the city, that can be a challenge for me. Is there a good way? Is there a good website? Is there a good way for people to find areas which have good dark skies where you're going to be able to see the Milky Way and some of these other things?
That's absolutely a good point. So the biggest determinant, whether you have a telescope or not, of what you're going to be able to see is the darkness of your skies. You know, that said, there's a lot of stuff that's fun from the city. So planets are great from the city. If you've got a telescope, usually you can see the brightest stars that make up the star lines and the constellations. Those are great from the city. And the moon is great from the city. Those stargazing experiences where you make a point to get out of the city, you do need to get out of town and you want to look for a light pollution map. And so if you Google light pollution map, there's lots of sites that all the top websites that you come up with on Google will work, and it'll basically be an overlay of Google Maps, and it'll show a color scheme ranging from dark blue or gray to red and white. And so you want to be in those gray and blue zones, or even green, which is sort of the suburbs, will be a lot better than being in a red zone or a white zone, which would be a city.
And here in Minnesota, we've got a pretty fantastic state park system, and I know those are usually really good areas for people to get out in, either with a telescope or just out under the dark skies there. Those usually do really, really well. Some of them even have designated stargazing areas where they'll have a big field or something like that so that you have a fairly low horizon in the distance that gives you that much more of a view. So encourage people to check out the state park system as well. Let's talk about the telescope itself. You said that there's a lot of telescopes that you can find for fairly cheap, but they're not designed actually for stargazing, even if they're marketed that way. How do folks tell the difference there? Or what is there a minimum baseline price that they should be looking for, or how do they make that distinction?
Yeah, and it's really there's great telescopes and not so great telescopes at every price point, and that really makes it a challenge as well. You know, so there's a couple red flags to look out for. You know, one, you don't want a telescope that looks like it's mounted on a camera mount. So, or a camera tripod. That's a big red flag. Mm-hmm. One is finder scopes. Beginner telescopes with those little finder scopes, typically you want it to have a red dot finder instead. The finder scopes tend to be unusable. And they don't. You need a finder, but the finder telescope on a beginner telescope, not really a good idea, not easy for kids. Another one is the diagonal. So if you look at a kid's telescope or a beginner telescope, the diagonal should be at a 90-degree angle. And so that's what connects the eyepiece, what you look into, to the telescope. It's a mirror inside that just redirects the light up into your eye. If that is at a 45-degree diagonal as opposed to 90, then that telescope is probably not designed for looking at outer space. You need that 90-degree diagonal so that the telescope can point high in the sky. Now, things to look for, and I found that this helps eliminate a lot of the not-so-great telescopes out there. You want to look for an aperture, and that's usually in the name of the telescope, of 100 millimeters or higher. And a really popular telescope that I've found to be a lot of fun is a 102-millimeter refractor. So a refractor is a telescope that uses lenses to gather light from space. A reflector is one that uses mirrors. And so the refractor at 102 millimeters, and they're made by all sorts of brands, but they're probably actually all made at the same factory in China. But that look for that 102 millimeters. Yeah. I found that's typically a sign that the telescope should be okay and fairly easy to use. And those are the ones if you're on a budget. If you've got maybe $500 or higher, then you would look for a Newtonian, and the kind would be Dobsonian. And so you want to look for that name, Dobsonian. And so that would be the style of telescope if you've got a little bit higher of a budget. And this is for visual observing. Now, it's important to recognize that that stargazing and taking photos are completely different hobbies. They're almost completely unrelated. Different. As soon as you say, I want to take a photo through my telescope, you've left stargazing altogether and you've entered the realm of astrophotography. And there's a whole different set of gear that comes along with that. And so, but that on a budget, 102 millimeter refractor. And if you've got a little bit more money, $500 or higher, a Dobsonian. And these are for stargazing telescopes.
And this is getting a little into the weeds, but part of the reason that I found your channel is because I violated one of your rules for people that are just getting into the stargazing habit and want to buy a telescope, which is not to start with an equatorial mount, which is, of course, what I did. And so I had to find your video on how does this thing work and how to use all of that. And I do get asked by people all the time, you know, what kind of telescope should I get? And they want me just to give them, oh, here's a brand name and here's a model and here's what you should do. But it really does depend on budgeting and then what exactly you want to do with it. Because like you said, trying to take pictures is a completely different animal than just visual observing.
Yeah, absolutely. And generally, that first question is on budget. So I answer this question for people in the YouTube comment section multiple times per day. And you really got to hammer down that budget and then be willing to stretch that budget, you know, because currently there's really nothing out there under $200 that will function as a telescope, as a well-rounded telescope for looking at things in space. So any telescope will show you the moon. So a lot of the good reviews on Amazon come from you get a cheap telescope for maybe under $100 and they can see the moon, 5 stars. You know, but there's so much more that a telescope should be able to do than just see the moon. You should be able to see the rings of Saturn. And if you go to dark skies, you should be able to see those galaxies and nebula that, you know, you hear so much about.
Yeah. And that's where we're running short on time here, but I want to wrap with you because that's the next question. Once people have a telescope is, okay, where do I point this thing? And the moon is an obvious target and it's a fantastic target. There's so many different things to observe on the moon. And that's one of the books that I have of yours, which is called 50 Things to See on the Moon. And what I love about that book is that you group it by days of like the moon phases. So days 1 through 5, here's what you can see and so on and so forth through the first half of the lunar cycle, those first 14 days, those first 2 weeks from new moon to full moon. And it's just, it makes it so easy to each night be able to go out and see something different on the moon. It's really, really a well organized book.
Yeah, we did. The book did win the Simon Newcomb Award, so clearly it's helped a lot of people. Yeah, so if you're just getting into astronomy, the moon is definitely the way to start. Once you move past the moon, you know, we have books like 50 Things to See with a Telescope and 110 Things to See with a Telescope. But if you're just getting started and you don't have a telescope, and let's say you've got a family with kids, we just released a book called A Kid's Guide to the Night Sky. And so that can be found wherever books are sold. That's published by Sourcebooks, which is a division of Penguin Random House. And so that you can find that book anywhere, A Kid's Guide to the Night Sky.
John, I could talk to you for 45 more minutes, and I've got 1,000 more questions, but I want to be respectful of your time. Thank you so much for being here, folks. The YouTube channel is Learn to Stargaze, so look that up on your YouTube account. And like John said, you can find his books anywhere, Amazon, wherever else. I have 50 Things to See on the Moon and 110 Things to See with a Telescope, and they're really super helpful. I'm very appreciative of your work, John, and thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here on WCCO this afternoon.
Absolutely, Dan. This was great. Thanks so much.
So I hope you guys enjoyed that. If you weren't obsessed with the comet the way that I was this week, I don't know what to tell you. That was, you know, big ball of ice and rock and dirt floating through space. It comes around once 80,000 years. I mean, come on. How cool is that? How cool is that? We'll talk a little bit more space coming up next. You're listening to WCCO Radio.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. You're listening to News Talk 830 WCCO. My name is Dan Cook. Thank you for spending a portion of your Saturday with me. We got Steve Thompson coming up at 3 o'clock, and he'll host Tech Talk. You'll get a chance to have all of your tech questions answered with Steve and Doug Swinhart. That's coming up at the top of the hour, so stick around for that. We want to go back to the salesfinancial.com talking text line and 651-461-9226 and talk to Kelly in St. Paul, who has a question, I believe, about the comet. Kelly, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. What's your question?
Super. Well, I had just gotten into the car and heard you at the end of that last segment, and you had been fascinated with the comet, and I have been trying to, see it the past few weeks for sure, because I thought they said on the news you could see it for a few more evenings. So do you have any hints or tips on how I can see it? I've been looking at a clear evening.
Yeah,
okay,
so
thank you.
It's getting dimmer as it goes farther away from the sun now, so it's becoming more and more difficult to see. At this point, tonight, you might still be able to pick it up with the naked eye, but you'd be very much helped by having at least a decent pair of binoculars if you don't have a telescope to pick it up. But you might still be able to catch it. If your skies are dark enough, you still might be able to catch it. But you want to be looking. Tonight, it's going to come up in the, I believe, the southwestern skies, or maybe just west of southwest. So you want to go out about 45 minutes after sunset, which I think is 6:25, something around there tonight is sunset. So about 45 minutes after that, so about 7 o'clock, 7:10 or so, when that glow in the western sky really starts to dip down towards the horizon. And then if you can find Venus, which will be the brightest star there in the southwestern, be close to the horizon, and look up and to the right, maybe three fist lengths, if you hold your fist out at arm's length, maybe three fistfuls up and to the right from Venus, and that should be where it is. It can be a little difficult searching the sky like that. If you have a device, I would download an app called Stellarium, S-T-E-L-L-A-R-I-U-M, Stellarium. That's a free app, and it shows you from your – it uses your phone's GPS to figure out where you are and then shows you what's available in the night sky and where it is at various times. You can scroll along with a time bar and see it that way too.
By the way, sunset tonight is 6:20.
6:20. All right, so about 45 minutes after that. So just after 7 o'clock is when it will start to be visible
But again, if you can find somebody that has a good set of binoculars, that would be a huge help. Because again, it is getting dim. So.
Yeah.
The other thing to do, Kelly, you know, people have been talking about with the auroras too, that, you know, you can see stuff through your phone camera much easier than you can see it with your naked eye. The other thing to do is to take your cell phone, and if you, especially if you have a small tripod for it, but even if you can just rest on like a railing or something and get that southwestern sky in view and take a longer, if you have a night mode, either iPhone and Androids both have some form of night mode, but get like a 3-second exposure of that southwestern sky, and that will help bring it out. Even if you can't really see it with the naked eye, you should still be able to pick it up with your cell phone.
Okay. All right. Venus was very clear last night.
Yeah. If you can find Venus, it is up and to the right from Venus. So
kept looking. I couldn't find it.
It's tough. It's tough now. It's gotten pretty dim. So the first night it came out was last Saturday. So we're already a week into it, and it's moved much, obviously much further away, but it's dim, but give it a shot.
We have like one more. Okay. Thank you.
You bet, Kelly. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you calling in. She's on the Stiles Financial Talk and Text Line, 651-461-9226. Yeah, John, it was visible to the naked eye, I think Tuesday is when I was finally able to see it when the clouds parted, and it was just a thing of beauty. It was gorgeous to see it hanging out there. But you really can pick it up much better with your cell phone camera than you can with the naked eye.
Yeah, and you can slow down the shutter speed and that sort of thing.
Yep.
You can do things with a camera that you can't even do with the naked eye, so... But like you said, binoculars or a telescope is going to be the best way to see something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool to be able to check that out and to think, you know, they said at one point that the tail on the thing, because you could see in the sky, this tail went on, it was like 18 million miles long, which is just crazy to think about how big this thing must be to produce a tail like that. And to just see it floating there in the western sky, my apartment building faces due west. So I literally could just walk out on my balcony and boom, there it was. It was remarkable. But again, John Reed was a great guest for us. If you want to check out his books, you can do so at Amazon. Last name is spelled like Reading the Activity, R-E-A-D. And again, look at the Learn to Stargaze channel on YouTube, and you get all kinds of great information from him on both how to do it and then what kind of equipment to use if you'd like to get into that habit. So be sure to check that out. Coming up next, we're going to take a break. We'll get you an update on weather. And then we're going to bring one of the segments that I like to do with Jason DeRussia on Drive Time with DeRussia. It is called Three Disasters and Puppies, and that'll be coming up next right here on WCCO Radio. Good afternoon. Thank you for being along here on a Saturday afternoon. My name is Dan Cook, in for Shaletta Brundage, who is out, I don't know, with the family or building the empire or probably doing both. That seems to be her modus operandi. So she'll be back hopefully in a couple of weeks, I believe she's coming back.
Yes. I don't know how much further she can build the empire.
Don't think that there's a limit.
Is she going to Guam? Is she going to...
Would you put it past her?
The Galapagos Islands?
Anything's possible.
There's not many places where the empire doesn't reach.
I think it's not just global. I think we're talking galactic empire at some point.
So she's going to the planet formerly known as Pluto.
You never know. So many of you are familiar with me for working with Jason DeRussia. And yes, that is just as difficult as you think it is. I kid. He's a wonderful human being. And I'm very lucky to work with him Monday through Friday from 3 to 6 right here on WCCU Radio. And one of the segments we like to do is called Three Disasters and Puppies. Yes, it's Three Disasters and Puppies. I put this together every week because we have so many stories that we collect throughout the week. We can't use them all on the show. We have way too much show to be able to get in just 3 hours. So I collect them and I find three tales of woe and one tale of God's favorite creature to resurrect your faith in life being available on this planet. And we start with disaster number one. Jonathan, nearly 90,000 tabletop fire pits are being recalled after flames shot out of them and resulted in a handful of serious burn injuries. Yes, the Coulson-branded fire pits, which are designed to hold fires by burning liquid alcohol. What could possibly go wrong with that? They pose a flame-jetting hazard, according to a recall notice published Thursday by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission. The flame-jetting can occur when a user is refilling the container if fire flashes back and propels the burning alcohol, according to the AP. The commission and Miami-based Coulson urge consumers to stop using the fire pits immediately and throw them away. Yes, if you get scorched by your fire pit, don't use it again. Alcohol flames can be invisible, and the liquid may also spill or leak out of the pit during use, which, of course, can cause a flash fire. The recall notice warns that this can lead to injury quickly and unexpectedly, potentially causing burns in less than 1 second that can be serious and even deadly. The commission says it's received 31 reports of flame jetting or flames escaping from the fire pits, resulting in 19 burn injuries. Two of those were third-degree burns on more than 40% of the victim's body. And at least 6 incidents involve surgery, prolonged medical treatment, loss of function, or permanent disfigurement. They look great. I love a little outdoor fire, right? I love a little outdoor fire. The tabletop thing looks like it'd be very convenient. You don't have to have the whole pit. Just avoid the one that uses alcohol, apparently.
So basically, this should come with a disclaimer saying, unless you have a pyrotechnic suit, you better not use this.
And who doesn't have one of those hanging in the closet for
Halloween weekend costumes, man?
A little weekend party.
It is that time of the year. Go get your fire safe suit.
Oof. Disaster number two, Jonathan, is this Joker sequel. Critics don't like it, and audiences seem to like it even less after 2 weeks in theaters. The way things are going, Joker Folie à Deux is on track to be one of the year's biggest catastrophes in Hollywood, according to Variety magazine. The story focuses on the numbers, and they are bleak for Warner Brothers. When all is said and done, the movie is expected to lose up to $200 million of its backers' money, according to outlet sources. Considering the film is a sequel to the 2019 Joker film that pulled in more than $1 billion worldwide as a smash hit, the reversal is a bit of a joke. You remember that famous scene in Dark Knight where the Joker, played by Heath Ledger, sets stacks and stacks of money on fire? Asks Mary-Kate Carr of the AV Club. Well, this defiantly unenjoyable movie is doing it in real life, she says. One big reason is that the studio shelled out $20 million up front to director Todd Phillips and a returning lead Joaquin Phoenix, plus another $12 million to Lady Gaga. Another seems to be that Phillips' decision to make the sequel a musical has flopped in a big way. The new sequel also saw the worst second-week decline for any comic book movie. It's currently grossed about $51.5 million domestically and $165 million globally, and those two numbers aren't expected to rise much given how much audiences rejected it in week two.
There's a pretty tried-and-true message with this. The sequel usually doesn't live up to the original.
No.
It rarely does. And
but it's usually not a spectacular bomb.
No,
either.
It's not. But what I was going to say is, so when Geraldine Steele was working here, she would have her son on, Michael Battle, and they would talk movies, and he's in that business.
Mm-hmm.
And he would talk about not just movies themselves, but he would talk about the budgets that are used for these movies to get them to the screen, to get them through production, through the making of them and all that. I wonder what the full budget for this movie was. Because it sounds like it was somewhere in the, you know, I guess $300 to $400 million range.
They're going to lose 200. It'd have to be up in that area, right?
Cause, yes, and I know you've seen it. I know everybody's seen it. Everybody has a television. They were relentlessly promoting this.
Yes.
Through the last 3 to 4 months, not just going up, you know, a couple weeks before, but this has been in trailer promotion for months. And to have it bomb, potentially bomb like this, that is not good.
Not good. I mean, you got a lot of big names attached to it. And the first one, you know, as the story said, was super successful. I wasn't a huge enjoyer of the first one. It was just too violent for me. But I understand other people loved it. But this one, I haven't even bothered to see. And I don't – this. I mean, now we're talking about a season of bombs now, right? I mean, Francis Ford Coppola had his Megalopolis, and that didn't do anything.
Oh,
and now
yeah.
Joker was a big one.
I haven't even heard anything about that since
so,
it came out.
Laura Oakes' son, Charlie Oakes, does movie reviews for us on Drive Time with DeRussia. He walked out of Megalopolis. It was so bad. And then we were going to have him on to review Joker, and then I think he got ill. I'm not saying the movie made him ill, but he wasn't able to join us. So
wow.
Not good.
Mm.
Not good. Disaster number three, Jonathan. You got to buckle up for this one because a cheating scandal is roiling England. Yes. The accusations revolve around the winner of the World Conquer Championships and if he used a metal conquer to defeat his opponent's conquers. We're not residents of the British Isles, and presuming most of the people that are listening aren't, so you might be a little confused by that sentence, but a conker, C-O-N-K-E-R, is a chestnut that falls from trees and can be found all over Britain and Ireland in the fall. The competition, also known as conkers, goes like this. Holes are drilled through the conkers and strings are threaded through each one, with one conker on a string for each competitor. Two opponents face off and with the goal of destroying the other person's conker with your own by whipping it against one another. The last person standing with an intact conker wins. Once a year, several hundred adults gather for the World Conker Championships in the tiny English village of Southwick, which has about 160 residents. This year, the competition drew 256 contestants and about 2,500 spectators. This year, however, the men's competition became embroiled in controversy. The title on Sunday went to David Jenkins, who won for the first time after many decades of taking part in the annual tradition. After the tournament, however, Alistair Johnson Ferguson, is there a more British name than Alistair Johnson Ferguson? The runner-up in the men's tournament claimed that Mr. Jenkins had broken the rules en route to winning the trophy by using a steel conker. And indeed, a painted steel conker was found in Mr. Jenkins' pockets after the tournament. But he vehemently denied the cheating accusations to the British news media, saying he carried the steel conker because he thought it would be humorous. That's all. He wouldn't actually cheat with the thing. Organizers of the event say they were investigating by examining photos and videos taken by spectators during the event, but so far, they had no reason to believe Mr. Jenkins cheated by using the steel conker. You want to play a conker later after the show, Jason? I'll get a chestnut, you get a chestnut, and we'll...
So, I think we found something more ridiculous than face-slapping.
Is Dana White actually still trying to promote that face-slapping league?
I don't know if he is or not. I just know that, yes, it was absurd. A thing very recently.
At least with conker, you're probably not hurting anybody. I mean, unless, you know, that's the steel one.
I mean, you're whipping something.
It's a chestnut. I mean,
it's a chestnut, but I mean, okay, if it explodes, do you get conker injuries? Do you get...
I mean, they're probably shrapnel
in the eye.
It's possible. Maybe you have to wear protective eyewear.
Do you get chestnut cuts, kind of like paper cuts?
You don't know.
Got to put some Neosporin on there.
These are fair questions. So don't use the particular tabletop fire pit. You're going to burn yourself. Don't go see Joker 2. It's awful. And be careful and don't cheat when you're playing Conker. Those are our three disasters, which means it's time for a story from God's favorite creature. Yes, it is time to resurrect our faith in humanity with puppies. Jonathan, among the nearly 300-member University of Northern Iowa Panther Marching Band is one unofficial furry member, Winnie, the Golden Retriever. Winnie is UNI sophomore Gabby Reason's service dog. I'm part of the marching band, so that means she is too, Reason, who plays the cymbals, told ABC News Cedar Rapids affiliate KCRG. Reason, an elementary education major, has had Winnie for a year and a half, according to the article. Winnie is trained and helps Reason, who has postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and yes, I practice that, otherwise known as POTS, a condition causing one to faint or be lightheaded when standing up from a lying down position due to an abnormal increase in heart rate. She says, for me, it means that I pass out randomly without warning, like my heart rate just fluctuates more than most people. When Reason performs or practices for marching band, Winnie is right there on the field with her and is also equipped with headphones to protect her hearing. Justin Mertz, the director of the Panther Marching Band, told KCRG that having Winnie with the students has worked out well. As we talked through things, it became more and more clear to me that not only did I think it would be okay, I actually thought we'd be able to make it work very, very well. I'm a music educator, and we believe that music is for everyone, and it's our mission to provide these musical and educational opportunities for every single student. That's the band director. Reason said that having Winnie has opened doors for her, and she encourages others to pursue their passions. You can do what you put your mind to no matter what, if you have a disability or not, just going out there and doing what's important, said Reason. Winnie, the service dog, is accompanying the UNI marching band. So
that's a great
story. When the band hits the field and you're normally turning the channel, don't do it if it's a UNI game. You want to see Winnie.
Yes, this is correct. There are very few bands out there that attract the attention of people by themselves. But a band with a dog.
Don't tell the band people that, man. I have some friends that are band people, and they get very upset when people dismiss the band.
I went to PWIs is called trying to think of the prodigiously white institution. I can't remember the P part of it. I've known band members.
Yeah, so you know what I'm talking about.
Great people.
They're very
unless
fanatical about their fandom.
Unless you're an HBCU,
yeah,
or you're the Ohio State.
You don't want to dot the I?
Yeah. Usually the bands are not what you're tuning in for. But a band with a dog.
Band with a dog. And the dog has, I love that, the dog has headphones for hearing protection.
Yes.
That's fantastic.
Now, is the dog in rhythm? That's all I want to know.
I would think so.
I'd
Why not,
the,
I'd right?
I hope the dog be in rhythm.
That, if everybody else is marching around, I would think the dog would figure it out.
You put that on Thanksgiving. That's what you put on.
There you go. There you go. So we don't deserve dogs, John. They're God's favorite creatures. They bless our lives, all of us. Love dogs and love service dogs that help out for the UNI marching band. That's three disasters and puppies. We'll take a break, come back, and close out the show ahead of Steve Thompson, who will join you after 3 o'clock right here on WCCO Radio. Final segment of the Shaletta Show here on WCCO Radio for this Saturday. Steve Thompson will be joining you after the top of the hour. He'll be doing Tech Talk, so hang around for that. But I want to thank Jonathan Lowe, who's been the producer here today, for all your help. Jonathan, you've done a wonderful job as always. I knew you could do it, and I was counting on you to do it and shepherding me through these 3 hours. Thank you very much.
And thank you for the Bitcoin.
Yes, the Bitcoin. I've been giving everybody $5 in Bitcoin to say nice things about me.
By the way, for the people out there, he gave me no Bitcoin.
No, I didn't give me any Bitcoin at all. I'm not, nor am I.
Could you give me a lead to the Bitcoin?
Yeah, it's over there. Before we get to Steve, I want to go back to the stylesfinancial.com talking text line. A few texts coming in. One text says, I love me some Shaletta, but what a nice calm change this day has been. I hope you can do it again. Thank you very much for that. I hope so, too. We'll see. We'll see. Our boss is a harsh grader. It's really tough. He's a great coach. So we'll see what he comes up with and what he thinks about it. Enjoyable show, Dan and Jonathan. Nicely done. Thank you for that. Dan, you are WCCO's best producer. Aw. Don't tell Jimmy Erickson that. So glad to hear you hosting a show. You're a natural. As an astrophotography fan, loved your astronomy segment. I will check out his video and books. The Minnesota Astronomical Society has some viewing areas and lots of events. Yes, they do. I've been out to the Eagle Lake Observatory out in Norwood Young America, out to the west here, was where the Minnesota Astronomical Society is for some of their star parties. And those are a lot of fun. That's a cool place to go check out.
By the way, thanks a lot, listener.
Best producer?
Yeah.
I mean, you're not here as often. If you were here more,
We just talked in the last segment or in the break actually about egos and egos in this business.
Yeah.
That didn't do so hot for mine.
Wow, I took a nap, woke up, and can hear the confidence in your voice, Dan Cook. Way to go, knocked it out of the park. Oh, it's very kind, very very kind. Kudos, Dan. I've been enjoying your debut guest hosting the show. I truly hope you'll do this more often. The content has been brilliant, brilliant. John, did you hear that? Brilliant, Brad Lane.
Okay.
Are you listening? Brilliant. Please, please, please do this again. Thank you for all the kind texts and kind thoughts. I appreciate it very, very much. If you missed some of the show earlier today, we talked with Sloan Martin about Game 4 in the WNBA Finals last night. Sloan's fantastic on the WNBA and broke that down for us. That'll be available as a podcast. You can go check that out. And then I had my friend Dan Kent, who's an associate pastor at Woodland Hills Church. We talked about faith and politics, not in terms of here's who faith says you should vote for, but here's how faith can help guide you in making that decision and then help you in discussing it with people who disagree with you, which I think the church does best when it's telling you here's a trajectory for life laid out for you by your creator, not here's exactly what you should be doing step by step. Because we all are individual people with lots of different faults and interests and all of the things, and to try and restrict ourselves to you have to do A, B, C, or X, Y, Z, it just doesn't – to me, that doesn't lead to human flourishing. Finding a general trajectory and concepts of way to approach life, I think, is the way we flourish best as human beings. And I think faith can inform that, whatever your faith is. So check that one out on podcast as well. And then you heard a lot of people talking astronomy in those text messages. John Reed, R-E-A-D, is the host of the Learn to Stargaze channel on YouTube. And he's the author of several books, my favorite of which is 50 Things to See on the Moon, which does an awesome job of walking you through day by day during the lunar cycle of the various different geographical locations, craters, mountain ranges, all different kinds of fun things that you can check out on the moon with a relatively inexpensive telescope. You can get great views of the moon, and it's a lot of fun. So check all those out. Podcasts will be available shortly.
It will be available this afternoon. It will be under Shaletta's show page. So
Yes. Just
make sure you go to the Shaletta Show page. All of the interviews from today will be in, since Dan is guest hosting for Shaletta. So that's the page you need to go to.
There you go. Check it out, WCCORadio.com. And please do check us out during the week, Monday through Friday, 3 to 6. Jason DeRussia does an amazing job hosting, and I get to come along for the ride and hopefully have us a little fun along the way. So thank you all for being here today. Stick around. Steve Thompson coming up after the news right here on WCCO Radio.